Hi, listeners. This is Molt, a series of conversations about the ways that death and dying touch our lives. I'm Ashlyn, and I hope what you hear sparks new ideas about death in today's world. While home in Indiana between school semesters, I sat down with my dad to talk about his sister and my aunt, Alicia. Without knowing her, I know how much she meant to my dad. As her namesake, born just a few months after she died, I felt her loss throughout my childhood. Until recently, I always found it hard to talk about Alicia with my dad. As open as we've always been with each other, and despite us both knowing how much magic this story holds. Okay. Hi, Dad. Thanks for joining me on my podcast today. I want to start by just letting you introduce yourself.
Well, hello. My name's Rob Anderson, and I am 51 years old. I work in the pharma industry, and I just enjoy my family life.
Great. Well, I'm really happy to be home with you during the holidays and to have this opportunity to talk to you about your experience. I shared a bit about my experience of Alicia in the trailer for this podcast. Alicia is my aunt, and even though she died before I met her, over the course of my life, I've developed my own relationship with her spirit. Alicia was your sister. Can you tell us about her and what it was like to grow up with Alicia?
Well, yeah, I think I can. It's interesting in that sometimes I wonder how much of my memories are in fact reality or how much I've just created over the years. But the main thing I remember about Alicia is that she was always laughing, just happy. And when I was a very frightened and scared child, she just seemed like she was having the epitome of a fun life. And I think that's, when I look back in my memories, that's mostly how I remember her.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed hearing about your stories growing up with her, the dances that you would do with her. And I also, I know a little bit about the story of Alicia and Ryan White, and I think that's always been really inspirational to me. Can you say a little bit about that?
Sure. When we were growing up, we lived in Kokomo, on the outside of Kokomo, and we lived in the apartments that were kind of like the wrong side of the tracks apartments for the school district we live in. But Ryan White actually lived in the same neighborhood, just in a house and not the apartments. And my sister was good friends with his sister, Andrea. And it was a very strange time, of course, because looking back on it now, thinking about the pandemic that we're in now and the similarities to what it was like with AIDS in the 80s. And I think it was just interesting to me is that somehow the way we grew up, neither one of us had any sort of fear of that. But especially Alicia, she continued to go over and hang out with Andrea and Ryan, for that matter. And they also rode our school bus. And so it was at a time when people were scared and hurling accusations and such, we were just never really a part of that.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I want to go now to the year 1991. Alicia is 17 years old, living in Arizona. You're 21, living in Indiana, newly married to my mom, who is pregnant with me. You got a call from Arizona one day about Alicia. Can you take us to that day from what you remember?
Well, from what I remember, it was actually Mother's Day, which is kind of a pretty significant day to lose your child. I was in Indiana, and I remember getting a call from my mom saying that my sister's eye was swollen and that she was kind of tripping. and that she was taking her to the hospital. And I believe I may have talked to Alicia on the phone, but I really don't remember that very much. I just know that it was a time of confusion and panic. And at the time, we didn't really know anything other than that her eye was swelling. So it continued to progress over the day. At some point, what the doctor said is that her blood was clotting, so that when they took her blood, there were hardly any platelets, so they just knew that that meant that the blood was all clotting somewhere within the body. And I believe the doctors were hopeful at that point, that they thought that she could be okay. It just would take a long time for she'd have some recovery to do, because they thought maybe she'd had some mini strokes. But there was a sense of urgency, so that they said that I should get out to Arizona right away. And it's interesting to look at the cost of airline tickets and the way that that worked, but I remember that in order to get on a plane that day, it was super expensive. It was over $1,000 to get on a plane to go there, and coming from a poor family, it wasn't very easy to round up that amount of money, but we ended up making it work. So I flew out there, and I think when I landed at the airport, I don't even remember who picked me up, maybe one of my sister's friends. I had gotten a call that she had an infarction, which is what they called it, that a blood clot moved to her brain, and that she was unconscious. And that's kind of, by the time I got there, basically, she was already brain dead.
What was it like when you first saw her?
Well, I guess first it's important to add that my mom had also been admitted to the hospital, basically, for shock. So my mom was in a room of her own, and my sister was in her room, and I went in and I guess sort of felt surreal. Like, I wasn't for sure that I really even had a sister anymore, and that, you know, what was happening didn't necessarily seem like it was real. When I saw her, she just looked like she was asleep. And basically at that point, they had also told me that there was probably no hope of her being able to recover. And so I just remember that just this kick of responsibility hit me and made me realize that I was going to be responsible for making everything happen, getting through to my mom and making arrangements. And I just know that to that degree, I sort of felt maybe not so sad at the moment as much as I had to be responsible for what was going to happen.
Yeah, that's something that's really difficult for me to imagine. One, just like you at that age, and I have two sisters as well, and it's something that, you know, fortunately I haven't had to experience, but thinking about you in that position and knowing how much Alicia meant to you and was, you know, a source of security and love in your life, and how alone you were in many other regards in life. How did Aunt Janet, my great aunt, my grandmother's sister, how did the rest of the family support you, or how were they involved in those moments?
The family that I come from was the typical broken, poor, dysfunctional family, is the way that I remember your mom's parents just continually warned your mom about what a dysfunctional bad family I came from. But to me, it was what I knew. And all I knew is that there was always a lot of love. And so I think, you know, it's just an outpouring of love. I think for some reason, I think poor people are better at that than maybe rich and well-to-do people, because that's all you have. I think it was Janet was always like a older sister to me, my mom's sister. And I had actually moved from Arizona to live with Aunt Janet. And I do remember when I did that, and I don't have many regrets in my life, but one of the thing about that is Alicia had come back with me for Christmas, and I decided that I was going to stay, and she wanted to stay too. And I'm not saying that it was up to me, that decision, because she was only probably 15, but I made sure that she went back. And so I kind of regret that, because as siblings, we were what kept the family together. I mean, just our relationship. My mom had always chosen to be with people who were abusive or addicts, or just all the people she was with had caused problems. So my sister and I were always kind of the team. Like, we somehow made our situation feel normal. And so I think the family knew that too. So I think that there was a realization from the family and Aunt Janet in particular, knowing what my relationship was with my sister. And then my mom, when she came back, she was just kind of out of it at that point.
Mm-hmm. If you remember, how did you say goodbye to Alicia?
Well, that's kind of interesting, because what had happened, since she had a blood clot to her brain and she was a 17-year-old girl with relatively nothing else wrong with her, we had decided that she was going to be an organ donor. And I will say that while that was wonderful and a lot of lives were saved, and there are probably lives that are still going on from other generations because of her, it's a wonderful thing. I would say for a family, it's difficult, because there's this feeling of when their heart and blood is still pumping and everything, from a perspective of looking at a monitor, everything seems normal. So saying goodbye is kind of strange, because it doesn't feel final. And there was one interesting thing that happened when I was talking to her for one of the last times at the hospital and holding her hand. And I think I was trying to do Reiki on her as well, because it's sort of my thing. She lifted her shoulders slightly, and I always thought that because of that, she could hear me. So there was some comfort in that. I'd asked the doctors why that happened, and they said it was probably just some sort of neurological response and nothing to do with what she heard. But I always kind of felt that was some sort of sign that she knew that I was there, since we didn't get to talk much before she had the blood clot to her brain. So I think, you know, when I said goodbye, it was probably just more of a thank you for kind of being my rock up to that point, and knowing that, you know, that we survived our childhood, or that I did, and was now an adult and going into a new life. I think it was just sort of something I knew that I would be okay.
What were the months like between Alicia's death and my birth?
Well, that was another interesting time. In some ways, maybe one of the best times that your mom and I had, because she was at the end of her pregnancy, so she was no longer taking classes and not working. And I, since I had to drop out of the first summer session because of my sister's death, so we had a lot of time on our hands. And I think we just played games and cards, and we just had hours and hours of time to spend. I remember that there was a terrible emptiness, and that I think the hardest part about when somebody young dies is when you think about all of the lost potential or the lost things that would never happen. And so that emptiness felt overwhelming for months. I think that the fact that you were coming definitely gave me a spark of hope, you know, like a light at the end of the tunnel, that I could, in a way, replace all of the love that I had for her to you. We also didn't know whether you were going to be a girl or a boy, but I think everyone in the family wanted you to be a girl, because just, I know you can never replace somebody with somebody else, but it was sort of that feeling that a new life was coming, and if it was a girl, it could almost be a replacement. So I think that time, I think that was definitely probably the loneliest time that I ever felt in my life, but your mom was great. We bonded because as I was experiencing a loss of my sister, your mom was sort of experiencing a loss of her family, because there was a sense of competition with her family and feeling like my family was getting more attention, and my family was also the dysfunctional and bad family. And so I think the two of us during that time were able to become really close, because we sort of both lost our families at that particular time.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't quite thought about that with what Mom was going through at the time, but I have heard, you know, plenty of stories about my birth and some of the circumstances surrounding it, not even thinking of Alicia's death, but just among the family. So it's interesting to hear your perspective on that. But for me, growing up as your daughter, I always, I think it's grown stronger as I've gotten older and been able to reflect and be more aware of what you were giving me throughout my childhood. And that is this sense of spirituality that's not grounded in one particular religion, although we did spend, you know, my childhood going to the Christian church. But even thinking back to the way that we prayed every night, and it was more this opportunity to just reflect on what we were giving each other as a family. And something about that, I think that's sort of the consistent thing that I look back on as my childhood, of like this anchor in spirituality. But, you know, you mentioned Reiki, and I don't know, maybe I feel like something has awakened in me over these past couple of years about this innate spirituality. But how much of that do you feel is tied to your upbringing, your relationship with Alicia, others in your family?
Yeah, I would say that spirituality has been a very strange thing for me, in that even though I come from a family who would all say that they're Christian, I sort of went down my spiritual path on my own. I had a blue-haired aunt, Alice, which was my grandpa's sister, that lived probably maybe a half a mile from us. And she went to a church, and she picked me up every Sunday. So from a young age, I went by myself. Even before that, there's a story of me when I was probably four, catching the wrong bus. So there used to be church buses that would come around and pick the kids up at the neighborhood. And there was one particular day I was waiting and I got on the wrong church bus. So I went to some random church and the family thought I was lost because they saw the other bus come around and I wasn't there. So spirituality was always my own. And then when I was probably in middle school, my best friend that lived down the street, dad was a preacher. And they went to a Pentecostal church, and so I got involved in church with them. And that was a very enlightening experience, very different from the blue-haired lady, old lady church that I went to with Aunt Alice. People speaking in tongues and falling on the floor, and I sort of followed along and did all of that as well. And then my mom went through a phase where we went to, my sister and I called it a skirt church, where all the ladies didn't cut their hair and only wore skirts. We hated it. We would go, and on Sundays, like, this church service would be like 4 hours, and we never wanted to go, but it was one of my mom's weird phases, so we had to do that. So I was never really on board with that one. That one was probably borderline cult, in that they thought that the only people that were going to heaven were the people in that church. So it's going to be really small heaven, I guess. But as I grew older, and when your mom and I went to church together, I think that's really when I started forming my own opinions on church. And I think also because of struggling with my sexuality and knowing probably deep down that I was actually gay, there was definitely a lot of things that were said at church that I found offensive. And it wasn't because I was even acting on anything. It was just the fact that there was a lot of Christian churches that were calling people evil for the way they were born. And I, you know, had my own perspective on that, since that was something I never chose. And then when you were born, and very naive and innocent, there was sort of a breaking point. You probably know what I'm talking about, but we were at McDonald's, I believe, and you said, "Daddy, do you know how long ago dinosaurs existed?" And you said, "Was it 6 million years or 6,000 years?" And I said, "Oh, 6 million years." And you said, "No. We learned in Sunday school that the dinosaurs were just here 6,000 years ago." And I just remember being furious. I at some point that week called the church and told the pastor that I was a scientist and that I did not appreciate that this kind of things was being taught to the children, like sort of almost like it felt like manipulating your mind. And he said that he would talk to them, and that wasn't their intention. But I just remember, I think that was sort of a turning point for me with Christianity, to realize that while I had gained a lot of aspects in spirituality from Christianity, that it probably wasn't the path that I was going to continue. But it definitely was a foundation in my life, and I would say that mainly the reason that it probably was because of death in general. I experienced death very deeply at such a young age. I had great-grandparents that died and grandparents that died at a very fairly early young age. My grandma died when she was 59, and I was very close to her. So I think that, you know, I used deaths as a way to pray to the people that had died. Not so much, I knew that I had to pray to God too, but I mostly used it as an opportunity to talk to my dead loved ones. So I think that's where, you know, spirituality probably always meant more to me because of dead people than the actual God.
Yeah, you've definitely instilled a lot of that in me, and my spirituality, the way it has evolved, is similar in that when I meditate or pray,
usually after I finish a yoga practice, I always go toward whatever place I believe in that moment where I will meet the people that I've lost. And, you know, those include Grammy and Alicia and even, you know, like Papaw's mother, who I never met, but feel connected to in some sense. And you know, I just in the last newsletter issue was interested in how people think about their ancestors, whether they met them or not, the impact that they leave on them and the way that they continue to communicate or recall them. So I think I did get a lot of that from you. I mentioned in the trailer of the podcast about dreams, and I know in our family, Amelia makes fun of you and me because our dreams are so specific, sometimes really humorous, other times really deep, but we're able to recall them very vividly. And I know, you know, Alicia, the way that she's featured in your dreams is really obviously interesting to me. So I wondered if you could share a little bit about dreams and death.
Yeah, I definitely have been someone that has had a life, another life in my dream world. I've had a lot of recurring dreams throughout my life about specific houses and places and groups of people who I've never recall meeting. But whenever I dream about you or my sister, there's always been this intermingling of not knowing exactly who I was with. And so I think that at least either spiritually or within my brain, you being born so soon after my sister died, there's definitely a confusion of your two souls, I guess, in my mind. You know, one of the things that I will say that, you know, was sort of always taught to me, and I don't know if this came from church or not, but there was this thing that when one person dies, another person is born. And that there was this sort of understanding to me from a very young age is that the spirit of a person lives on and could be put into another person. And so while I'm not for sure that necessarily happened with you and Alicia, I think that there's definitely a possibility that either that it really happened or that in my mind that I believe that that happened. And so when I dream, I'm always confused about whether you're my sister or you're my daughter, but I never feel bad about it. It's comforting in a way.
Mm-hmm. What you said reminds me of something somewhat unrelated, but about trauma. You know, because you said either that is the case or it's how your mind processed it, and that's how your mind makes sense of it. And I've thought about that with certain things that I've experienced in my life where it almost seems like they take on a life of their own. And sometimes I'll get upset with myself because I've let this like narrative form about the experience that I had and feel like that's perpetuating some of the emotion that I felt. And this maybe was not as positive as, you know, my birth following Alicia's death, but it just made me think of where do these things really exist? And in the end, does it really matter whether it happened for sure, or for it's something that your mind learned to process? And I, at some point, I had to stop focusing so much on separating those things out. How do you think about the afterlife, or do you think of an afterlife? And do you imagine that you will be reunited with Alicia in any way that you aren't already experiencing?
I don't think that I think that an afterlife to me is definitely not the picture that Christians or other religions think of it as, this palace and surrounded by gold and stuff. But I sort of think that, you know, from an energy perspective, we're made up of energy. And I think that maybe when we die, there's a reconnection of the energy somehow. And so that I think that there may be some sort of euphoric kind of feeling of when you die and you connect with your past in that way. So I think that there's definitely a possibility of reconnecting. I sort of hope that it's like one of my dreams that, you know, in some ways maybe we're already living another life and another realm that we just can't get to in this life, so that when we die, maybe we just go into another life that we've already somehow been creating or has been created for us.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share about either your memories with Alicia, your relationships with your family members, or just the way that you think about your own existence?
Well, I think, you know, one thing that I have always thought of in the terms of Alicia dying and you is how you, in a way, saved my life. You gave my life another meaning. You know, what unfortunately didn't happen is none of us could save my mom's life. So she basically died of heartache, really. She developed a lot of health issues, and I think all of it was related to depression. But one of the things that all of that taught me is what to do when you lose a loved one and how to grieve that. I know when my mom died, we were a very traditional family when it came to funerals and things, and we would have open caskets and long lines of people and expensive burial plots and caskets and all of that. But when my mom died, I was in charge again, and I was able to make the decisions that comforted me. And in that, we had a memorial service with no body. She was cremated, and I was given the ashes. And one of the things that I thought was just cathartic for me was trying to figure out what to do with Grammy's ashes. And so I still think about this a lot. I had these ashes, and I didn't even order like a urn. It was literally in a plastic box, in a bag inside of the box. But I had no idea, because my mom was a very private person, and I think she always thought she would die young, but she never really had any wishes or thoughts about that. So I remember finding this photo of her, and she almost looked glowing, like she was so happy. And it was at this place called Slide Rock. And so I took a trip to Arizona and climbed up a mountain and dumped her ashes off of that where she was sitting in that picture. And I just always thought that death wishes should be given to your family, your surviving family members, that what I would want really doesn't matter, because what matters is how the living grieve, in my opinion, that it's not about what makes the person that was already alive happy, but in death, it should be given over to the people who love you the most to decide for that. So that's why with me, I've always thought I want my body split up to for each of you to make a decision for what to do with it. And then if you decide to bury it or whatever, that's fine too.
Yes, we just recently went over your end-of-life wishes in New Jersey in this strange year we've been living in different parts of the country during a pandemic. But I think it's really special that we're able to talk about those things together. And I just want to say thank you for having this conversation with me. We've talked about this a lot over the years, but it really is special to sit down and have a more structured conversation about it. And I know it's hard, but the two of us think about the ways that these people have impacted our lives all the time, for different reasons, and some of them that, you know, like Alicia, who I never met. But it's, yeah, it's an honor to be with you and to be spending this time with you.
Well, thank you. I've often thought about ways to share my experience throughout my life, whether it's writing it down or thinking about it in a different way. And so this has really kind of given me an opportunity to do that and to record it for history.